Okay, good morning, everyone. We're going to get started. Thank you for joining us this morning. My name is Cynthia Nielsen, and I'm the Health Promotion Specialist Knowledge Broker at the Program Training and Consultation Center. I will be moderating today's webinar. If you're having trouble logging onto the webinar via the Microsoft link, please call the 1-800 number for PPCC. The number is 1-800-363-7822. We are currently recording this webinar. Please be aware that we'll be posting this recorded webinar on our website along with the slides by the end of this week. Okay, so for those of you who are new to this platform, you'll see the presentation deck on your right. On your left side of the screen, you'll see the chat box in the lower left corner. This chat box is made public to everyone, so whatever you write will be posted and viewable to all of those in the webinar today, as well as myself and the presenters. During this webinar, we will be taking pauses to take questions at predefined times. Please feel free to enter any questions you have in this box throughout the presentation today, and we'll try to address as many of your questions throughout the presentation. Just to note as well, we have muted all of the lines, so we do encourage you to please just use the chat box to ask questions. Okay, so I'd like to welcome our presenters today. Our first presenter is Dr. Robert Schwartz. Dr. Schwartz is the Executive Director of the Ontario Tobacco Research Unit and Associate Professor at the Dalhousie School of Public Health at the University of Toronto. He has interests in research evaluation and knowledge exchange. I'm also pleased to introduce our second presenter, Dr. Sean O'Connor. Dr. O'Connor is an expert in the surveillance of tobacco control experts. At OTRU, Sean leads the Strategy Evaluation Working Group, which produces an annual report detailing progress at the Smoke-Free Ontario Strategy. So welcome, Dr. Schwartz and Dr. O'Connor. I'll now turn it over to the two of you.
Thank you and welcome. It's wonderful to be here again with those of you who joined us in previous years. And for those of us, of you who were not with us previously, welcome. And I want to start just by thanking PTCC for hosting this webinar, as this has turned into a wonderful collaboration between the Ontario Tobacco Research Unit and PTCC. And for us, it's a wonderful way to get our knowledge that we've produced and synthesized across to the community in a quick and, we hope, a pleasant way. So we will be with you today for 90 minutes, and Sean O'Connor and I are going to split the presentation. So as we all know, we have a complex and comprehensive tobacco strategy, and to understand that, we need a comprehensive and complex approach. OTRU has been doing annual monitoring reports of the strategy since 1994, and you can find previous reports on our website. It has evolved into what we think is a new and improved product each year. This year's report is similar to last year's, although we do have a couple of innovations, and there are even a couple of new findings, additional data about what is happening in terms of processes and the outcomes of tobacco control. This is the table of contents of the full report. Many of you will have had a chance to download the report. The report that you have is not final. It is practically there. And I'll just say already now that the final complete report will be released within a couple of weeks' time and will be available on our website. The chapters are straightforward. After the introduction, we talk about tobacco use, about protection from secondhand smoke and social exposure, about cessation prevention. Then we talk about the social climate and public support for tobacco control policies and conclude. Why are we doing all this? It's not to give a report card. That's not the purpose. The purpose is to learn. It's all about system learning, and we are very fortunate in Ontario to have a tobacco control system that is designed for learning. And the Ontario Tobacco Research Unit, together with other partners, produces the knowledge, the information about what is happening, the surveillance, and the monitoring of progress, in order to see how well are we doing, how does that compare to international standards, and how does that compare to where Ontario thinks it wants to be. And we not only give the results at the population level about the outcomes, but we try to understand how the interventions at the policy level and at the program level are making a difference, and what can be done at the policy and program intervention levels to further improve what is overall a success story. We work with logic models, and you probably can't see these on the slide. The full models are in the report. We're not going to go into these in depth right now, but what they do is these are what we call intervention path logic models, and they lay out the interventions and how the interventions at the policy and programmatic level work through key paths in order to achieve short-term, intermediate-term, and long-term outcomes. We have these for each of the major goal areas of the strategy: protection, cessation, and prevention, and then we have an overall system logic model as well. Just a few words about how we go about arriving at our conclusions. Our methodological approach certainly uses both quantitative and qualitative measures. The strategy itself is made up of a variety of interventions. There are infrastructure interventions that include things like PTCC and SHAF and the training that's done by TEACH and YADI and RNAO and others. These provide the infrastructure, the capacity for interventions to actually happen. Where do we get our information from? First of all, we have program data and policy data. That is data about what is actually being done, what is the reach of the interventions, and what do we know about the effectiveness of those interventions in achieving their desired outcomes. We also look sometimes at unintended consequences, which may be positive or negative. And then at the population level, we collect data using the survey sources that you see in front of you. CCHS is the Canadian Community Health Survey. CTUMS, which will be no longer in our next report already because it's being replaced by a different survey, is a federal initiative. The Canadian Tobacco Use Monitoring Survey, YSS, in a similar way, will not be the same survey moving forward, but is being replaced. That is the Youth Smoking Survey. CAMH, the Center for Addiction and Mental Health Monitor, monitors addiction and mental health awareness, behavior, and knowledge for adults. And OSS, the Ontario Student Drug Use and Health Survey, does the same for students in elementary, junior, and high schools. Since we're monitoring progress, we don't take snapshots for the most part. Wherever we have trend data, and for as long as we have trend data, we use that trend data because we want to see, are we doing better or worse? Are we making progress since what was happening last year and in previous years? We include data on various subpopulations that are defined by geography. So in Ontario, this report is about Ontario. Within Ontario, to the extent that data is available, we go down to the TCAN level and to the public health unit level. Unfortunately, we still don't have enough data to say a whole lot about what's happening at the public health unit level in great detail. We look at data by sex, by education, and by occupation as well. So how can we tell if we're doing well or not well, what progress we are making? Well, it always has to be compared to something else. So previous OTRU reports, we would be comparing over the course of time. Is the prevalence of tobacco use decreasing? Are we doing better in increasing the number of smokers who are quitting? Have we decreased the number of youth who are initiating? We can compare that to what happened previously. we have the guidance documents, which are part of the Ontario Public Health Standards. And these guidance documents guide particularly public health units in what they should be doing in order to have local comprehensive tobacco control in place. We look at MPOWER. MPOWER is an acronym for six major policy interventions that the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control, known as FCTC, has adopted, and it lays out at what level should each of these policies be in place in order to advance tobacco control. This is the first year that we're using MPOWER in the report, and it is a standard that allows us to compare Ontario to what the parties to the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control have agreed. I want to stress, doing all of what MPOWER says is vital, but it is insufficient because MPOWER is essentially a minimum standard. We have done modeling that demonstrates that if Ontario were to implement all of MPOWER, we would still only get down to a 10% prevalence in the use of tobacco, and that wouldn't be until something like 2040. And I think that we can all agree that that just is not good enough. In addition, we compare to SAC, which is the Scientific Advisory Committee report referred to in the report at length. In this report, the standards were developed by the scientific community in Ontario and then validated by an international experts who looked at the report. And they are designed to guide Ontario on what does the scientific evidence say about where to go next. What should be done in Ontario over the next 5 years or so in order to improve the reduction in tobacco use? The TSAG report was a report of the Advisory Group on Tobacco Control that included that drew from the SAC report and had conclusions of its own. So we have a number of standards by which we are able to compare progress in Ontario to desired outcomes. Okay, the next part of the presentation is going to talk about the problem side of the equation. How's it looking? Well, you know, it's a glass half empty or half full. 22% of Ontarians have used some form of tobacco in the past 30 days. Is that good or bad? Well, that depends on how you're looking at things. Compared to what was in the 1970s, this is better. But compared to where we think we would like to go, this is not so very good. I want to stress that this is all tobacco use. So it includes not only cigarette use, but also the use of cigars, little cigars, and smokeless tobacco. Thank you. Sean and Pipe.
Okay, so we're now going to take some time to poll all of you. So Dr. Schwartz is going to read the question and the choice of answers. Once they have finished reading the options, we'll open the poll up for all of you to vote. You'll be able to see the answers coming through in real time. So in order to vote, you just need to use your mouse to click on the circle beside the option you'd like to select. So we're now going to, I'll turn it over to Dr. Schwartz to read the question, and then we'll open the poll.
Okay, so we want to know from you, you know, we know that 22% of Ontarians are using some form of tobacco in the past 30 days. Which form of tobacco has the highest past 30-day use? Apart from cigarettes. So we're talking about, you can answer either cigars, which would include little cigars and cigarillos, or you can answer smokeless tobacco, which would include chew, snus, stuff combined. So which of these two categories accounts for the highest number of past 30-day users?
So we've just opened the poll, so you can go ahead and vote now.
Ba-dum-bum-bum.
Give it a few more seconds. There's still some coming in.
Please vote. There are how many? 160 people or so registered for this teleconference. And so far we have 76 responses. We want more. Don't be shy. Okay, it looks like that's where we're going to get to. With 76 responses, so two-thirds of you approximately have said that cigar use accounts for the highest number, and a third of the smokeless use. And now we're going to give you the real answer to this question. And the real answer to this question is that those who said cigar use are correct. 5% of Ontarians have used cigars or cigarillos or little cigars in the past 30 days, and only 0.5% have used pipe, snuff, and chew. So thank you. That's an important little fact and a way, hopefully, to get you excited about learning more. Moving on. So this gives you the breakdown of the different uses within all tobacco use. Cigarette use just the past 30 days is 19%. Now you're going to see a different figure of 18% shortly, and the difference between the 19% and the 18% is because the 19% doesn't have the 100-day requirement or condition in it, and usually we use the 100-day requirement, but since we couldn't use that for the other forms of tobacco use, here it's 19%. In the rest of our presentation, it's going to be 18%. And just to note that all of the figures we've been talking about so far are for Ontarians aged 12 years old and over. We have a question here about... we said 5% of Ontarians use cigars. Is that all of Ontarians or just tobacco users? That's all of Ontarians, age 12 and over. And we have another question about, does the ministry use CCHS as its baseline? I'm not going to answer for the ministry. We always recommend using CCHS because it's a larger sample, and we believe that it's more reliable data over the long term. The ministry may use different sources of data at different points in time. Okay, I'm going to continue. There are many questions coming in, and when we get to the question period, we'll try to answer more of them. That's what we've been instructed to do. So it's not that we're ignoring you. We will get to them. Okay, but there are large differences in the use of each of these types of tobacco in different ways. And for example, it's true that 5% are using cigars in the past 30 days, but males are using them way more than females, 8% versus 1.4%. And then look what's happening in the 15 to 29-year-old range. 16% of males are using cigars or cigarillos age 15 to 29. Only 3% of females, but 16% of males. That's a large proportion. And smokeless tobacco use amongst grade 7 to 12 students was almost 5% in the past year. So big differences. It's not enough to look at the general picture when we're thinking about our interventions. We've got to drill down and think about the subpopulations of interest. And it's also important to note that regarding smokeless tobacco, while only 4.6% used in the past year, 47% tried it once or twice, and 64% have used it up to five times. So, you know, these are larger numbers of people who are experimenting. Water pipe or hookah is a hot item. And this is new data, very interesting. Some of you have heard it in other sources. This comes from OSDUS, the Ontario Student Drug Use and Health Survey. And the use of water pipe amongst youth in schools is greater than the use of cigarettes. This is really quite a phenomena, and I think it's important for people in the field to look closely at this and to think about what this means in terms of interventions. So 10% of students in grades 7 to 12 used water pipe in this past year versus only 8.5% who used cigarettes in the past year. 19% of grade 12 students used water pipe in the past year. That's shocking. 15% used cigarettes in the past year is also shocking, but water pipe is higher. This requires perhaps greater attention. I'm not to say that people are not looking at water pipe, but something to think about closely. We're going to get to another slide that says, what is Ontario striving to do? And it says, Ontario has said officially that it wants to be the Canadian jurisdiction with the lowest rate of smoking. That position is currently held by British Columbia, where 14% of age 12 plus are smoking cigarettes. In Ontario, we're at 18%. Now, in thinking about how we are going to be the lowest jurisdiction, we need always to take into account that British Columbia isn't going to stay still, probably, even though Ontario is actually staying still. We don't know that British Columbia will stay still. So as we increase our efforts to get down to 14%, it's not unlikely that British Columbia is going to get down to lower than 14%, so that we're going to have to really put our foot on the gas pedal, so to speak. This slide, it's the first chart that we are showing, looks at the trend. Current smoking past 30 days from 2000 through 2012. As we've said before, we're currently at 18%. And, the frustrating thing, I think, for many, many of us is that we haven't moved that substantially or significantly in a statistically significant way for over 5 years. It's been 18%, 18%, 18%, 2010, 2011, 2012, even 2009, sorry. And the 19% in 2008 is not significantly different than that, and the 20% in 2007 is also not significantly different than the 18% that we have now.
The 20% might be significant, yeah.
Sorry, didn't mean to mislead you. Thank you, Sean, always making sure I don't mislead. Okay. So on this chart, just for those of you who may be unfamiliar with this type of presentation, on the what we call the y-axis, on the left-hand side going up, we show the percentage. That's the percentage of people smoking. And along the bottom, we show the years, 2000 through 2012. And this shows the trend. This is cigarette smoking only. And we are at 18%, been there for quite a while. And here, it's going to be hard for you to see it in the slide probably, but we wanted to show what's happening in the different public health units across Ontario. There's a big difference. There's a lot of variation amongst our 36 public health units. We are ranging from somewhere around 14% all the way up to 27%. And in six of those 36 public health units, the prevalence of smoking is over 25% still. This isn't meant to be a scorecard, sort of, but it's meant to show the variation that we have across public health units. And this just shows you the lowest right now. Our Ottawa and Peel share that privilege at being at 14%, and then Hastings, Prince Edward County, and Porcupine public health units share the highest rate of 27%. I should say that this fluctuates somewhat from year to year because the confidence intervals are somewhat large. So we do see in the surveys, because the sample size in public health units is relatively smaller, that there's a bit of fluctuation in who is in first place and who is in last place, et cetera, but this is the general trend. Comparing to Empower, that FCTC Framework Convention on Tobacco Control standard, which the standard that they give for tobacco use is based on daily smoking. And they say that a jurisdiction must be at less than 15% of daily smoking. Until now, we haven't been talking about daily smoking. We've been talking about current smoking, which is inclusive of daily smoking and occasional smoking. So in Ontario, our daily smoking rate for 18-plus is 15.4%. Still somewhat higher than the 15% that Empower requires, but almost there. I mentioned before what Ontario's goals are in smoking prevalence, and I've said the government of Ontario has proclaimed that it wants to be at the lowest rate in Canada. Currently, British Columbia is in that position. And the TSAG report stated that Ontario should decrease the prevalence of smoking by 5 percentage points over the course of 5 years. So if this year were the beginning, or 2012 were the beginning, it would mean that in 5 years from then, so in 2019, we should be at 12%. That would be the meaning of that. Really, to get there, there are only two ways to, you know, two things to do in the big picture. It's to increase the proportion of smokers who stop, and it's to decrease the proportion of youth who initiate. That's what the game is all about.
Okay, thank you very much, Dr. Schwartz. So we have a few minutes to take some questions. So I've been collecting the questions that have been coming in through the chat box, and we have three questions at this time. So as we, as our presenters are answering the questions, please feel free to type additional questions. We might not get to all of them in this break, but we do have a few opportunities to ask questions throughout. So the first question is, what makes for BC's success in the fight against tobacco use?
That is a great question, and we don't know for sure, but one thing to take into account is that British Columbia has started, and we've looked at this a bit, at a lower prevalence than did Ontario, so they may have gone down at a similar rate. Generally, British Columbia has had in many areas, they are healthier than our Ontarians. It's not only in smoking. It also has to do with physical activity and eating habits. Why this is, why is the West Coast healthier than Central Canada or the East Coast? I don't know. So that's something for your consideration. The demographics of British Columbia may also have something to do with it. A high rate of immigration from Asia, and despite what some people think, immigrants from Asia actually tend to have low or even very low smoking rates. So those are some possible answers to that question. Yes. Do you want to take that one?
Okay, so the next question is, so I think when you had mentioned the 18% cigarette use, someone was wondering when this has been since, and I think they had wondered, was that 2008?
Yeah, I believe it's 2009.
Okay.
With 2008, probably 19%.
Okay, great.
Okay, and I love the third question here. Have we evaluated some of the factors for lower versus higher smoking prevalence rates among particular public health units? We have not done that in detail. We have put forth a proposal to CIHR to study this in detail. What we would need to know is, first of all, there are demographic differences. There are differences in culture. There are differences in immigration, which can make this different. There are also differences in the starting point. So the prevalence rates in some of the health units started much, much higher than they did in other units. And what is of most interest that we don't know enough about, we have not done this analysis, is what is difference in the interventions? What have different public health units done differently than others in order to get them to where they have arrived at? Now we know that many of the measures that are taken eventually become provincial or even federal in nature, but we also know that many of the tobacco control measures are initiated at the local level. And a great example of that today is the outdoor smoking bans that have happened now in many municipalities and regions.
Okay, so we have time for one last question. So the last question is tobacco grown in British Columbia? That seems to be a factor in Ontario. How about across other provinces?
Yeah, it's not grown in British Columbia. As far as I know, it's grown in Ontario. There's
Quebec.
In Quebec also has a small, but the majority of growth is in Ontario, and it's in southwest Ontario.
It certainly could make a difference. We've seen in the past certainly that in tobacco growing areas there's been greater resistance to some of the tobacco control measures that have been taken. I am a political scientist. I probably should have said that to start off with. So it may be that in provinces where there are tobacco growers and manufacturers of the product, that the lobby is stronger. It may be, so that is all sort of hypothesis at this point.
Okay, so that's all the questions. We're going to move on, but please continue to ask your questions in the chat box throughout.
Okay, we're gonna switch speakers. It's Sean O'Connor coming up to the mic. All right, so I'm going to talk about the cessation goal. So in Ontario, here's just kind of a heuristic of what is the cessation infrastructure. Number of programs and services. The goal, of course, is to increase successful quitting. And we have a number of capacity building organizations which kind of get at infrastructure. And we have a number of policies in place as well. So I won't drill down into this. People can see this kind of generally what we're dealing with. Positive and negative vectors. So positive vectors are those vectors that are increasing cessation efforts. And so we have a number of, provincial and a few sub-provincial organizations that are running initiatives that are creating positive change. There's also a negative vector, the pro-tobacco influences, including the tobacco manufacturers, which are pushing in the opposite direction of public health, which also has to be taken into consideration. So how are we doing? So one measure of how we're doing is how many Ontarians have quit intentions. So this slide here is showing over time how many people have quit intentions the next 6 months, which is the purple line on top. Going right, if we want to look at the very end of 2012, we see that 56% of smokers have intentions to quit sometime in the next 6 months. So you ask them, do you intend to quit next 6 months? 56%, over half, say, yeah, I do. It is a broad measure, and it's easy enough to say, well, not going to quit now, I'm going to quit later. So we go on to ask, well, what about the next 30 days? So you're asking for kind of a larger commitment to some extent, and that's 25%. One quarter of people indicate that in the next 30 days they want to quit. So, I mean, there's good news and bad news here. The good news is that a quarter of all smokers plan to quit in the next 30 days. So that suggests that there's a clientele out there that is ready to quit and can be potentially accessed by public health and other folks. The bad news is that these rates have really remained unchanged over many, many years like that. So how many Ontarians make one or more quit attempts in the past year? So the previous slide was how many intend to quit. But in the past year, we see 43% of people actually made a quit attempt. So if you recall the previous slide, 25% plan to quit in the next 30 days, and 56, I believe, were going to quit in the next 6 months. So this is telling us that obviously the 6 month didn't hold true because only 43% quit in the past year. Good news, bad news. The good news you could argue is that 4 in 10 smokers have made a quit attempt. The bad news is that there hasn't been much change here over time. All right. So what this is looking at, this is a table of by year of folks that the second column, recent quit ratio, is the percentage of folks that is percentage of smokers past that have quit for 30 days or longer in the past year. So we see 7.6% have quit at some point in the past year for 30 days. When we 30 days isn't a long time. A lot of people that quit for a few days or 30 days go on to become smokers or to break that, break the quitting cycle and go on to become smokers. So what we have is this adjusted quit ratio, and this is applying a constant to find out, who has remained smoke-free, which smokers have remained smoke-free for the past year. And the past year is one metric that we use that is kind of evidence-based. It's a very good measure. But we see only 1.6% of past year smokers have remained smoke-free for 1 year. So, what this is telling us, and a report gets into this in a little bit of detail, and it's my understanding that there might be some future webinars on this topic, is that, you can increase these quit ratios, which will give you some success, but you can also increase the number of people making quit attempts. So we saw in the previous slide, 40-some percent of people are making a quit attempt in the past year. If you can increase the number of people that are making quit attempts, even if these numbers remain the same, you can get a lot more people successfully quitting. All right, we're going to go on to a polling question.
Sure. So obviously the same as last time. We'd like to post another poll. Please remember that you'll not be able to vote until after the question has been read and until we open the poll. So I'm going to turn it back over to Dr. O'Connor to read the question and the options before we open the poll.
Okay, so we have a question here. Which service had the most clients in 2012-13? And we have four topics here. So we have Ottawa Model for Smoking Cessation, the Ontario Drug Benefit Pharmacy Cessation Program, Smokers Helpline, and the STOP Program. So which of these had the most clients in 2012-13?
So we've opened the poll, so you can go ahead and vote.
I will, point out to folks if folks aren't aware that, we're not suggesting that all these programs are equivalent. They're different programs. Some of them are focused on they're targeting special or unique populations. They're not all Ontario-wide. They're not all focused on the 2 million smokers in Ontario. They may be focused on subpopulations, but we just wanted to give you a kind of a broad sense that these are some of the funded initiatives in Ontario. They're not all the funded initiatives.
I think all the votes are in.
All right. So we have 82 response, and we see the Smokers Helpline is the highest at 63%. Ottawa Model is the lowest at 7%, followed by ODB Pharmacy at 11%. All right.
And the answer is...
Da, da, da. So the answer is, from lowest to highest, ODB Pharmacy Smoking Cessation Program is the highest. So that
surprise.
Yeah, that was the second lowest recorded. And Smokers Helpline was the highest in the poll. We see here it's the second highest. But we also have Leave the Pack Behind on this slide, which wasn't in the poll, just for ease of only presenting four options. But we do see that, like as I mentioned, some of these initiatives focus on specific subpopulations, including the ODB Pharmacy Smoking Cessation Program. It's a specific population, but it does have a fair amount of reach. Smokers Helpline is really the only one that focuses on, you know, theoretically, the total population of smokers in Ontario. Okay, so we just had a few slides on cessation due to the length that we have today, but the Empower assessment of smoking cessation. So what does it say, and how are we doing with respect to cessation? Well, one thing that has been known to be most effective in increasing cessation is taxation. And we see that the Empower requirement is greater than 75% of retail price for the rate of taxation. In Ontario, we're at 64%. And we really haven't had a raise for many, many years, other than just for adjusting for some adjusting the price for some differences in changing the tax rates from provincial to federal and so forth. For cessation programs, Empower is recommending some intensive programming, including some free NRT. In Ontario, we do have NRT covered for some folks, but not all smokers. Empower also recommends mass media. In Ontario, we do run a campaign for social smokers, but it only runs for a certain number of weeks in a given year, and it is of a fairly small and unique population. We've done better with respect to health warnings and tobacco advertising ban. We've done reasonably well, but there are a number of loopholes where folks can, the industry that is, can advertise directly to adults and so forth. And advertising ban compliance is meets the Empower requirements. So what does the scientific advisory group say? So here is a fairly long list. I'm not going to read everything, but the scientific advisory group has come up with a number of initiatives that they would like to see. No wrong door is the first one, right? So tobacco users need a support system. They need to enter it in a number of different ways. You know, not only direct support, which is the second one, though that would be helpful. We have, you know, a number of initiatives which were kind of shown in the previous slides for direct support. And we also, rather, SAC is also recommending free NRT. So just, I don't think I'm going to read all these, but if folks just want to take a quick second to take a look at those, I'm just going to look here at some questions that have been asked. So there is a question, kind of what is the state of cessation in Ontario? What I wanted to point out is that the 90 odd thousand folks that are that was in the previous slide, the listing of all the different people that have taken, you know, Smokers Helpline and ODB and so forth was 95 or 96 thousand. There's 2 million odd smokers in Ontario, so that's 5% of smokers have touched base with some sort of SFO programming. So that's, you know, that's a fairly low number, 5%. So it'd be great if that could be increased. And, you know, that's something that we can look forward to. Now, of those initiatives, like I say, the Smokers Helpline was one of the only ones that was kind of, targeting, you know, most of those 2 million smokers, with exception of maybe some of the youth.
Yeah, if I can just chime in on the question here as well. It's a very good question about the state of interlinkage between the interventions. It's certainly been identified by several groups in the past, several committees that looked at this, and reviews that were done. And we know that there are efforts underway, and we've seen already some good collaborations between STOP, Ottawa Heart, and Smokers Helpline as some of the major players. Is there room for improvement? Certainly, but our impression is that the cessation task force and the players are working hard to improve on this. We can't, you know, our report doesn't comment in detail on this. There was a second question about physician counseling, and just to say briefly that we don't have the most recent data from that last year, but the data from 2010 show that 201,000 people were billed or their physicians billed for counseling in 1 year, but there was relatively few of those were actually followed up by the physicians, and it is important. We're not trying to hide this, and we do talk about it in the report. So it is an important component of the system, and I would say that it is one that does tend to get ignored. With all of these, one of the things we need to be paying attention to is their effectiveness. The reach is important, but to what extent are they having the desired effect? And if we go back to that figure from one of the previous slides, only 1.6% of smokers are actually quitting long-term in any given year. Okay, I think we should start moving a little bit more quickly as we've wanted to put forth quite a bit of information. And Sean, do you want to move forward?
Sure.
And
yeah.
We may choose to do either protection or prevention at this point.
I will say that the up to 95,000, there is some duplication here. That is clients which could potentially have taken more than one of these initiatives. It's not a huge overlap, I don't believe, but that is always the case that we do know that there are a number of people that have taken some of those combined initiatives. So prevention. So again, we have prevention infrastructure interventions. I won't get into this in any great detail, but you know, the goal of prevention is to reduce initiation and increase abstinence. We have a number of positive vectors, very similar to the cessation one, but there's a few additional ones. For instance, Youth Advocacy Institute, the Smoke-Free Movies, Play Live, Be Tobacco Free. And also, again, there's a negative vectors, pro-tobacco influences, which are kind of countering the positive vectors that are listed. So one measure of success is lifetime abstinence. So these are folks that, you know, have never smoked a cigarette, and we see that looking at the very last column is the most important here. It's the latest data, 2013, and in this case, the higher the data, the higher the line charts, the better. So we want to approach 100% abstinence. We see in grade 7 it's 97%, so we're doing quite well. And then it gradually goes up in grade 12 at 66%. So we see, from here, we're doing quite well with the younger groups as students age. It gets worse and worse. Over time, there has been quite a bit of success here. So we do see, looking for, from 2003 to 2013, that 10-year cycle, we do see that lifetime abstinence has increased basically across all grades. So that's encouraging. Past year smoking. So this was alluded to earlier when we looked at past year water pipe. And we noticed that past year water pipe was actually higher than past year smoking. Again, looking at this chart, looking at the very last column, 13, looking at the last column, 2013, we see that in grade 7 and 8, it's so low that it's suppressed. The data is suppressed. And then in grade 9, 10, and 11, it goes from 3%, 9%, 13% to 15%. So, again, with the young grades, over time, we see that prevalence has been increasing. And even amongst the older grades, if we look at grade 12, it's 15% now, but it was close to 40% in 99. So good news with youth, but one has to remember that you know, youth are very, very, with respect to the total population, in terms of the numbers, very low contribution to the overall numbers. We saw, looking at 12 years and over, that smoking rates hadn't changed over the last 5 years. So one useful measure to look at is past 30 days smoking. So this is the Canadian Community Health Survey, so this is in line with the earlier data presented. We see this is youth and young adults. We see that there's a large variation between youth and young adults in 2012, going from 4%, the very last column, 15 to 70-year-olds, right up to 24% for 25 and 29-year-olds. So we do seem to be making strong efforts with respect to students and young folks, but alarmingly, we see that amongst young adults, the rates are quite substantial. And if you look at males, they're even higher. The ease of obtaining cigarettes. So what we're finding is that, and this is amongst smokers, 94% of past year smokers believed it was easy. So I think we're finding that youth, if they want cigarettes, they can get cigarettes. They know where to go. They know how to get them. All right, we have a polling question.
Hey, Corinne, I'm going to turn it over to the third opportunity for you to vote. So same thing applies. I'm sure everyone knows how to vote. So we'll just post the poll up. Again, Sean's going to read the question and the options, and then you'll be able to vote afterwards.
Right. So here are some initiatives that could potentially impact or create success with respect to prevention. So the first one is decrease the availability of tobacco. Second one is raise taxes. Third is fund public education campaigns. And I think here we're getting at mass media, social marketing. Enhance school-based education. And last, focus efforts on transitions out of high school.
Okay, so just open the poll.
Right. And so if you could choose only one of these, which one would you choose? Which one is going to have the greatest impact?
Probably everybody.
Yeah. So, I think in general we have a fairly sophisticated audience with respect to prevention, or the illicit activities here. Raising taxes is by far the largest poll here. It's 60%. The next one, decrease availability of tobacco at 25%. So we're seeing some policy initiatives. And we do, based on research and even what's happened in Ontario, we do know that raising taxes, there's a price elasticity of taxation, and it's quite high. So raising taxes is one of the strongest initiatives, and as one of you has mentioned, or Michael Perley, there hasn't really been a tax increase since 2006, and what we're suggesting is that, off the different initiatives that could be done, taxation is a fairly strong measure, one of the strongest measures out there. We do see with respect to the Empower assessment, again, this is the same numbers as it is for cessation, obviously, because it's a kind of a macro initiative. They're recommending 75% of the retail price. Currently, we're at 64%. But maybe more even disconcerting than that is that there really hasn't been a tax increase for a number of years. There's also Empower is recommending mass media. We do have a social marketing campaign, but it is targeting social smokers. So, it's going to have limited reach for prevention. And then even at that, it's not running constantly in the field. It's only running, a few times a year for, several weeks at a time. Health warning labels, we do have a fairly strong initiative for health warning labels at 75% of the front and back surface area, so we've met that. Tobacco advertising ban, we don't meet that completely in the sense that there's direct mail to adult readerships. The Empower advertising ban compliance is an indicator that we do meet. So the scientific advisory group, what do they say? So there's a number of points that the group has mentioned. So we'll just look at a few here. There's a number of program initiatives that they're recommending, right from targeting high-risk groups, and also policy enforcement across settings. So this is not only youth access to tobacco, but a number of different policies. Media and social marketing strategies, they're recommending that. As I mentioned, the main social marketing campaign is primarily a cessation intervention, and there could be room for improvement in that front. Adult movies with any tobacco, again, that's been an initiative that's been worked on here in Ontario, but as of date, it hasn't been fully implemented, or has been implemented at all, I guess, in terms of rating movies with tobacco content as adult. And, of course, there's the interplay of various initiatives. So, you know, cessation assessment intervention can indirectly relate to prevention in terms of social modeling and even just getting at folks that are experimenting with tobacco. Rob?
Okay, no, I just wanted to get quickly to a couple of questions, well, I'm just going to answer them quickly. The first question was about the collective analysis of programming that's running simultaneously, and how can we figure out how much of the change in use of tobacco is due to taxation versus cessation efforts. We've actually done this analysis. We've developed SimSmoke Ontario, and we will be sharing those results with the community shortly, but basically, yes, cessation does have an additional unique impact on decreasing the use of tobacco above and beyond taxation. So we can go into that in more detail. Contraband, the impact of contraband, it does away with much of what taxes do. Not everybody is affected by contraband. Not everybody will use contraband. We have yet to do the study that will tell us precisely what is the impact of contraband, but undoubtedly the availability of contraband is a problem in terms of fighting tobacco. Did we investigate the percentage of smokers with mental health conditions? We have not done that for this analysis, although it has been done in various studies and tends to be quite high. So we know the proportion of the people who suffer from mental disease who smoke cigarettes is relatively high. And I think that, do we have any stats about e-cigarette use in Ontario? Sean, do you want to take that one?
Yeah, so we do have a number of survey sources that we've collected data. The data is not ready yet. The CAMH monitor, for instance, has asked a series of questions. That data was collected until December, and it'll be ready this spring. So we'll be putting out a special monitoring update on e-cigarettes that touch upon on e-cigarette use in Ontario. Okay, so protection. We have, I guess we have a poll
yes.
Coming up. Okay, so in which settings are Ontarians most exposed to secondhand smoke in the past 30 days? So a number of settings here. I won't read them all. I'll just let folks go on just to save some time. I think folks can read these themselves and choose the option that they would like to see.
Give it a few more seconds.
Okay. So, yeah, we have a majority of people are saying building entrances. The next is outdoor settings such as sidewalks, park at 9%. All right, so let's take a look at the data. So we see that the first one, which was, I believe it was 6%, that is actually the highest. Now, these percents don't match these percents here because it's a different metric, but 6% of you thought that outdoor smoking on sidewalks and parks was the highest. In reality, it is the highest. So the folks that said buildings at 84%, building entrances, which is the second one here, and these are all kind of past 3-day exposures. So we do see that there's a number of avenues for improvement, and there's I guess there's a suggestion that you know, there's the potential, I guess, that the any amendments to the Smoke-Free Ontario Act may target some of these, and I think we have strong evidence to suggest that that people are being exposed in some of these settings and that they should be targeted. Workplace exposure the past 3 days. So, you know, what we see here, again, looking at the last column, 2012, blue-collar workers, which is the green line on top, the last couple of years it's been quite high. In 2010, it was 28%, and then it increased to 43% and to 45.5% respectively. It's likely that that 28% where it dips down may be an anomaly, an artifact of the survey. We don't know. But given that if you kind of exclude that point, it's been high the last couple of years, and then historically it's been high. Relative to the other occupations, sales and services at 26% and white collar at 24%, which are basically the same. What this is saying, you know, is blue collar workers are more likely to be exposed to secondhand smoke at work. Restaurant and bar exposure. Now, this was on the poll. I think it was the same source. Restaurant and bar exposure is extremely low currently. So we do see, you know, historically it was higher, but present day, you know, at 4% and 2%, it's really, really low. What we do see, though, alarmingly, is that patio exposure is markedly high at 31%. So there's room for improvement there, and I know a number of jurisdictions have targeted patios, and these data suggest that it is a high rate of exposure amongst patios. So opinion on banning smoking. So this is by smoking status. So each of these clusters of bars is a different setting. By current smoker, former smoker, and never smoker. So we see that there's a difference in terms of support for banning smoking on parks, beaches, with smokers being less likely to support the initiative compared to former smokers and never smokers. Again, that's true for outdoor special events, and the third cluster of bars, outdoor recreation facilities. And the last one, there's more consensus here. Outdoor children's playgrounds, pools ban. Majority of folks, irrespective of their smoking status, are in support of prohibitions. 92%, I believe, of the total population is in support of those prohibitions. Continuing on this, looking at kind of clusters of support by smoking status, we see that the very first one is sidewalk bans. Much more never smokers at 59% are in support of that policy as opposed to 19% for current smokers. Entrances to public buildings ban. You know, there's some commonality there. The numbers are fairly close together. And then the last one, bus stops, transit shelters. Again, there's a little bit of separation with never smokers at 80%. And we see smokers at 41%. So some, you know, if you see a difference here, what this is telling us that there's room for improvement. And so there's something to strive for to get these all up to 100%, and even within the subpopulations to target these subpopulations to get them high. So in summary, with respect to prevention, you know, generally some good news. We've done a lot of work in protection over the years. Workplace exposure is high. Restaurant and bar is low. But as we saw, patio exposure is quite high at over 30%. Public support is reasonably high for most of these restrictions, but we look at subpopulations, we can get you know, room for improvement. The Empower assessment for protection, you know, we've done fairly well with respect to the requirements. We have smoke-free policies which meet the requirements, and the compliance with these policies also meet the requirements. With respect to the SAC, there are a number of policies that they're recommending that we progress with, and we saw with the recent announcements by the Ministry of Health and Long-Term Care that they're looking at several of these settings, and I think you know, what we can see from these data is that we should be all pushing the ministry to and you know all stakeholders to take these settings seriously, that there are exposure in these settings, and that they deserve smoke-free policies. Again, you know, media and social marketing at the provincial level, there's really not much happening at the protection level, and so we'll just leave it there for now.
So we're actually going to hold questions, so we just have a little over 20 minutes until the end of the webinar. So we are collecting your questions, and we'll be answering them at the end.
Yeah. Public opinion. So we have a couple of slides on public opinion. So the first one is the social unacceptability of smoking. So again, these clusters, the first cluster is adult smoking. What do folks, you know, how socially unacceptable is adult smoking? And that's done by smoking status. So we can see that the yellow, the last kind of the last bar in the cluster, at 63%. So that's never smokers. So never smokers are more likely to view adult smoking as unacceptable, compared to current smokers at 13%. So quite a big difference there. And then amongst teenage smokers, we see an elevated level of social unacceptability. Support for that amongst all current smokers, former smokers, and ever smokers, but even within this, current smokers are less supportive of this than our former smokers and never smokers. Views on the sale of cigarettes. So again, there's three bars here for each year. The first bar, the green one, is keep same as now for the sale of cigarettes. The purple bar is phase out over 5 or 10 years, and the yellow bar is stop as soon as possible. So looking at the last set of bars for 2012, you know, less than half, 47%, say keep as now. So, you know, we get 36 plus 12% is saying, you know, we need to take some serious action on this. So this is a fairly encouraging sign. In the sense that, you know, almost 50% of people are saying, you know, really in the next 5 or 10 years or as soon as possible, we need to do something with the sale of cigarettes. So it's quite high. These don't equal 100% because there are some don't knows. It has remained relatively stable over the years. So, you know, we can get behind this data and say that it's not any artifacts. This is real data. There's quite a bit of support for policy on the sale of cigarettes.
Okay, so this is your last opportunity to vote. This will be the last poll of the webinar. Okay,
so which party is most responsible for youth smoking initiation? All right, so we're talking about youth smoking. Who's responsible? Friends or peers? Parents? Tobacco industry? Young people themselves? Now, this is of the general population. I think it's, I'll have to double check when I get to this slide, but I think it's 18 plus adults in Ontario, Centre for Addiction and Mental Health Monitor. So from, you know, what I'm seeing here on this slide, I see the tobacco industry is the highest at 53%. And so I would say that the audience here today is quite attuned to what's happening. I would agree that the tobacco industry is responsible for youth people starting to smoke. Unfortunately, you know, the general population does not hold this view. As we'll see, we can maybe switch slides. So this, what we'll see here is the tobacco industry, the yellow bit, is the lowest for each of the years. And this suggests that, you know, potentially some areas of public education. What is high is friends and peers at 47% in 2011. Again, sorry, this is CTUMS, the Canadian Tobacco Use Monitoring Survey. So this is the latest data we had at the time. There's likely the 2012 data, which is coming out right around now, which would have more recent data, but we can see that it's fairly consistent over time. Okay, so we have, I think that's it for the whole presentation, I believe. I guess we do have some conclusions, I guess.
Well,
so
why don't we go to the questions, and then we can do the conclusions in 2 minutes at the end.
Okay, perfect.
Sure.
So we have a few questions that have come in. The first question is there a plan to separate sidewalks versus parks in the future?
Since we see there's demand for that, we'll work on doing it. Currently, the question is they're mushed together. So thank you for pointing that out, and that gives us some ammunition to try and build a new question in.
And just in case that question didn't mean the data source, but I could mean the regulation as well. The regulations, there is a proposal in place right now by the ministry to prohibit smoking in these settings. I would encourage folks, it may be too late. Well, it's never too late. I would encourage folks to answer the ministry call, whether it's late or not, to put forth their opinions on this. But as Rob mentioned, the data is combined.
Okay. The next question is, are there any jurisdictions that restrict smoking on most or all sidewalks?
Yeah, I read recently about a municipality that's not in Ontario, in the United States somewhere, that is restricting smoking everywhere. And I believe there are isolated communities in North America and perhaps in other places that have restricted smoking on most or all sidewalks. I am not familiar with one in Ontario, but if anybody on the line or has one, then please type it in.
And the last question that's come in is, where do you get the statistics for workplace exposure?
The workplace exposure statistics that we presented in this slide deck were from CTUMS. We also, in the main report, we also present some data from the Center for Addiction Mental Health Monitor as well, and we break it up by indoor and outdoor exposures.
And then I think I see some more people are typing, so why don't we'll continue to collect them as we make the final conclusions for the webinar today.
Okay, sure. Thank you all for your attention. I know it's a bit long, but there's lots to know. some conclusions. These are just some of the highlights. The cessation efforts that are currently underway, we've seen that the numbers of people reached by cessation supports has increased substantially over the past 2-3 years. We're up to 95,000, and we expect that these efforts will produce even greater gains as we move forward. We need also to keep in mind that, nevertheless, 95,000 out of over 2 million smokers is not great. Keep in mind, though, that most people actually do quit in the end without support. We do have a study on cessation pathways that shows what happens, and that one is currently up on our website. I would recommend that one to you. Really positive news about the downward trend in the prevalence of smoking for youth who are in school. We saw a big jump between the end of high school and young adulthood. There may be a cohort effect here. So, this may lend great promise for the future, and we have to really keep our finger on the pulse. It may be that the kids who are leaving high school now will not take up smoking in their young adulthood as much as the previous cohort or cohorts did. We don't know yet. There is exposure to secondhand smoke in numerous settings that are not covered, but the progress in those areas that are covered is great. So this is, this is a weird one. We talk about smoke-free Ontario, and often we think about it in terms of being protected from secondhand smoke, and yet, half of us are exposed to smoking in doorways, and a third are exposed to smoking on patios of restaurants and bars. And, you know, a large 45% of people, of blue-collar people who are working, are exposed to smoke at work. And we don't have the data here on the multi-unit dwellings, and we're still working on that, but that's also still a big issue. And we see that the social acceptability of smoking is still relatively high. So, you know, the whole ecological approach to tobacco control, where we're aiming at changing the social climate, and this is done partially through media, mass media, public education, you know, there's still room to grow in that area, and we see that Ontario has not, or for most of the past years, has not met even the Empower minimum standard on the amount of mass media, public education that should be happening. Generally, Ontario has most of Empower in place, not all of it. Empower, even if we did, I'll just repeat, even if we did all of Empower, we wouldn't get down to 10% of smoking prevalence, we would only get there by 2040. Really important to keep in mind, we've got to go way beyond Empower if we want to approach zero.
Okay, thank you very much. So you can still continue to use the chat box to ask questions. I see there's questions coming in. We also, if you'd like to ask your questions verbally, you can unmute your phone by pressing *7. As questions come in, I'm just wondering if you want to maybe comment on Kevin and Jennifer's comment on the sidewalk piece.
Okay. Not really. There is, you know, this is a legal question. We've heard the same things that are being written here, and I believe public health units have received different legal opinions from different legal experts, and we will leave it to others to do that one.
Sure. The next question is there a way to break down the blue-collar statistics between indoor workplaces versus outdoor workplaces, for example, construction, landscaping, et cetera?
Yeah. I mean, yes, it can be broken down. It's problematic in terms of sample size of the surveys, in terms of meeting release criteria. We are exploring that in detail. It does seem that given that workplace exposure is quite high at 25-30% over the last few years, both with whether you look at CTUMS or whether you look at CAMH monitor, it is high. We would love to be able to kind of dig into that a little bit more detail. We've taken a peek at it over the past year. It is possible for us to, with the CAMH monitor anyway, to look at, you know, several occupations within the blue collar and several occupations within the white collar and so forth. So we are exploring that. It is a problem, though, in general with respect to sample size.
Yes, and regarding e-cigarette use, we do have some data starting to come out. It's true from OSIS, and we do have questions on e-cigarettes in other surveys. I think, you know, on the e-cigarette one, we have to be really careful about what we're looking at. Okay, lifetime use of e-cigarettes. So what does that mean? Use it once, use it twice, and goodbye, Charlie. And, you know, are we using nicotine e-cigarettes or non-nicotine e-cigarettes? What we've seen so far is in surveys that have been in Ontario and abroad that the vast majority of e-cigarette use so far has been by smokers. You know, we don't know if that's largely to try to quit smoking or if it's to continue smoking cigarettes when they can and e-cigarettes when they can't smoke indoors. There are the patterns here. We don't know what is going to happen in the future. This is a diffusion of innovation, and it may be a hypothesis that some people have put forward is that as e-cigarette use gets normalized and becomes looking cool. I don't know if any of you saw the Golden Globes Awards, and there you have it right out there, really super cool actress smoking a super cool e-cigarette. How much e-cigarette use is that going to cause, that picture alone going to cause? So we've got to look at this closely, and there's lots of research to be done about the e-cigarettes, you know, how effective are they as cessation aids? Do they actually get smokers to stop, or do they get smokers to continue, or both, to what proportion, and to what extent 10% are new people who are not smokers picking up e-cigarette users and then becoming long-term e-cigarette users with nicotine or without nicotine. What's happening in the future is big questions around here.
Yeah, I'll just say that potentially for next year we do have the data for OSDAS just came out. And we do mention it in brief, but there's a question here about e-cigarette use. I think it would be useful to look at, in what Rob was saying, is to look at e-cigarette use only and cigarette use only. That is, folks that have tried e-cigarette for the first time and never haven't tried cigarettes, just to see amongst youth what's happening. The trajectory or patterns for youth may be different than for young adults or adults, and it's unknown at this point, but we'll be exploring that in the coming year. So potentially for next year's report, we may have something for you on e-cigarette use with respect to youth and adults as well, because the CAMH monitor will have data, in a few months.
Thank you. I think that's all of the questions. I don't see any others that have come in. I can hear someone on the line. Does someone have a question they'd like to ask? No? I can hear you. Okay, so I'll just turn it back over to Rob to comment on the report.
Okay, so thanks again for your attention. The full report will be available for all in 2 weeks' time, and always the data for the report comes from our tobacco informatics monitoring system. So most of the charts that you've seen today, you can produce and take off and copy as PDFs into any reports that you want to make. And there's more data in TIMS, that's the Tobacco Informatics Monitoring System. The website is up there, tims.otru.org. It's a recommended way to learn more about tobacco use in Ontario. There is some more data at the public health unit level in TIMS as well, and also in the report that we didn't bring today. So if you're looking for specific information about your own public health unit in comparison to others, please do review the report. Particularly, we have some information about secondhand smoke at the public health unit in cars and in homes. And we're also available to answer any questions that you may have. Please just send an email to Sean or I or to the general OTRU listserv.
Okay, so thank you very much for joining us, everyone, and a special thank you to our two presenters, Dr. Schwartz and Dr. O'Connor. As previously mentioned, you'll be able to access a recording of the webinar as well as the slide deck on the PDCC website by the end of this week, and you'll be receiving email instructions in an email in order to access this information. It's important to note that everyone attending this webinar today can expect to receive an email, again, by the end of this week, that will contain a link to an evaluation survey. If everyone could kindly take a few minutes to complete the evaluation, we'd really appreciate it. Your input helps us improve our webinars and host future learning opportunities to meet your needs. So thanks a lot, everyone, and we look forward to meeting you on our next webinar.
Hi. Just one last comment, too. With respect to that evaluation instrument that's going up at the end of the week, I'd really encourage everybody to fill it out, because we're really looking to boost this presentation up for next year. And any feedback, any and all feedback that we get, we can feedback into the presentation. So it's going to be extremely useful for folks to take a look at that evaluation instrument and to fill it out so that we can use that information, feed it back into a bigger and better presentation.
Great, thank you. Thanks, everybody. Have a good afternoon. Bye.
Thank you. Please stand by.